Dr. Michael Broom is a person that if you met him, you wouldn't forget him. He's interesting, provocative, and changes things. I owe a lot of the way that I function and show up at work because of him, his concepts, his way of being, and that he learns from almost everything that he encounters. I learned from him, I know you'll learn from him, and I know he's going to learn today too. Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about learning from differences, which is another way to say conflict. How do you leverage it to grow instead of it to leverage you to keep you the same?
Welcome to the Executive Shaman Podcast, where Dr. Crystal White and her comrades guide us to bring more wholeness, energy, and connectivity to our professions. We're ready, Crystal. Get us started.
There's something that's like a saying that's practice makes perfect. You've heard of that, right? So I want to welcome you again and know that we're like in process right now. So welcome you, Michael.
Well, thank you, Crystal. It's always a pleasure to be spending time with you.
The pleasure is mine, really, especially in this process.
No. It's mine.
People just think you put a podcast up quickly, and you can. There are many easy ways that I've recorded this, but this is a process of clicking on things and us having microphones and calls and scheduling through different time zones. And I appreciate the grit that the learning process requires. So thank you, Michael. And I asked the same question of all the guests, whether they've been on one time or it's a series. And the question is, what do you really do for a living?
What I really do for a living, what I really do for a living is try to enjoy myself. And a lot of my enjoyment comes through serving others and helping organizations work and doing that kind of thing, helping people get turned on to who they are and eating great food and drinking great wine.
This is why we get along.
Yes.
Now, why did you say yes to this podcast today?
Well, a couple reasons. One is that I am focused on sharing what wisdom I have gained through my years in as broad a means as possible. And the second reason is because you called and suggested that, no, actually, you didn't call. I called you, and it just worked.
It just worked. Yeah. There's something in life that we, for me, I'll speak for myself, and I've seen other humans do it, that we fight for things and we, like, push things, and then there are things that just work. And today we're going to be talking about, like, learning from differences. And sometimes when we learn from differences, it just works. And then another time we learn from differences, and it is like it's a forcing of a learning from differences. So, today when we're chatting about this, there's kind of two ways of going about the learning process. And one is kind of easy and it just flows, and another, it just takes work. So can you start us off on just describing what this topic in general is about and defining some of the terms for us?
Yes, probably the biggest, the biggest issue that humans being have is conflict. Mm-hmm. And conflict is always about some perceived set of differences where one person thinks they're right and the other person is wrong, and typically the other person thinks they're right and the other person is wrong. I mean, that is the essence of all conflicts that we experience, either in terms of conflicts between nations, conflicts between team members, conflicts between husbands and wives, between parents and children.
Right. Yeah.
So does that kind of cover that?
It does. I feel like it's a great reframe, that learning from differences is a reframe perspective of seeing conflict.
Yes. When we're in conflict, we are using differences in a way that actually preclude us from actually learning from them.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about it, the only thing that we can actually learn from, or another way to put it, that the real fundamental value of differences is that differences are the only source of learning that we have.
Yeah. You know, this is something that really resonated with me all the way back 20 years ago when I started figuring out what I wanted to do in terms of studying. And I started my journey in leadership development and consultation in the world of child development. So I always go back to this phenomenal thing that Piaget introduced to us. And it is the difference between assimilation and accommodation. And this is what happens in the brain when you're learning something new. Now, when you're learning something new, you either assimilate it, saying, oh, there's something new, I'm going to refer back to what I have experienced or learned before and just clump it in that category. Or you accommodate it. You have to change your category in to the new reality that you're experiencing, right? And what they've shown is with kids that are stressed out, and what I've seen with adults that are stressed out, is that you stop accommodating, meaning you do not change your schema, your cognitive schema, to fit the situation. You make the situation fit your predetermined experience. And learning from differences gets to a point of accommodation. Not that somebody gives up or you give in, but you create a new reality together versus making somebody just fit into your pre-existing version of the of right and wrong.
Yes,
does that resonate with you?
It makes me think of another situation where we want to avoid conflict. That so many people are conflict avoidant and they don't want to get involved in the conflict. So they wind up accommodating in the sense of actually conforming their own thoughts and their own behavior with those that they see as dominant over them. It puts us in a situation where we have to kind of deplete ourselves and put ourselves away, not use our strengths, not use our weaknesses, and that is as stressful as anything else. A good example of this actually is in the workplace. Let's say I go into a new workplace and I see that my boss has a certain set of values that is about, you know, you must do what I say. Well, if I want to keep my job, I generally tend to then squelch my own values, squelch myself, so that I do not offend my boss rather than fight with him. And I think that is as damaging to our psyches as anything else. You can see it also in children that have dominating and domineering parents.
Sure.
Where the children feel crushed under the weight of the authority of their parents. And it takes them a while to become who they really are in the world.
So in that situation, when people overly accommodate, meaning they lose in order so somebody can win, or they are less than so somebody is more than, or they don't put up a fight because it would cause too much trouble, nobody, you know, want to rock the boat. My favorite saying is, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything nice at all, which is really good in many, many contexts and really oppressive in many, many others. This is the fascinating thing about the human brain. And as human beings, we can understand that context absolutely matters of when to engage in a certain behavior and when not to. In that situation, that's not true accommodation. Accommodation is when you change your experience, your schema, your belief in your brain to fit the situation at hand. So when we have people who are overly accommodating, I am actually overly accommodating oftentimes in my personal relationships. Not so much in professional ones, but
still, I think, in personal, very intimate relationships, I can accommodate. And that is not, that's actually me just going back to my learned behavior, back to an automatic reaction, back to an assimilating schema that I have in my head, that the nice thing to do is to allow and or not to allow other people, but I give my power up to that. So it's like, that's phenomenal. If you can learn from the difference, even in yourself, it's not even just that you're learning from a difference about another human being. You actually can leverage your own discomfort, your own upset internally, your internal conflict, to understand what is something that I need to learn here. What is something that is a message for me? What is something that needs attention to? So what's something that you often advise people to switch from conflict to learning from differences?
Well, probably the first piece is to help them see how often that they are playing win-lose, and particularly, I lose, they win. To help them see that they have even contributed to that, and to help them see that there are other options that actually do not involve getting into conflict. That they can begin to be curious, that they can begin to be truly interested in the person's position who differs from them, appreciate what they share. None of which says that they have agreed. Chances are, in that process, a couple things could happen. One, I will learn something I didn't know, either about the person's position. Often I will learn something new about that person. And third, I'm likely to learn something new about myself.
Always am fascinated by myself of, like, after a conflict being like, what the heck? I cannot believe that I have that in me. Like, that's in me. It's not something that I could pay attention to before. So learning from differences really means paying attention to what's happening, happening inside yourself and happening around you, rather than the little story that you have in your head. And so it's also, you know, just really important to be like, this is what I am perceiving. It's not necessarily what is happening in the moment. And that is helpful to take it away from a us versus them mindset, which your brain is going to go to, your body will go to, because you're hardwired during conflict to fight, to flight, or to freeze. And once you do that, you start assimilating. You start going back to pattern. You start going back to your training. You start going back to, you know, just everything that you're programmed for. And if you need to take a time out, that's like the best thing you could do sometimes, to begin to start learning instead of start surviving. Because learning will help you survive in the long term. But most conflicts are so immediate, you know, when, like, I need to save myself. I need, or somebody else, right? I love conflicts that we involve a third party so we can save somebody else and make it okay.
Of course.
Negative things. So what's something that you've been learning from lately? Like a aha that you've recently shared with yourself?
Well, actually, you just gave me one that I think I might do some writing about. So there's a fight, flight, or freeze. And sometimes I think freezing is just a different form of flight. But there should be then a third option, fight, flight, or learn. So that is an article that I will put on my list to do a blog post post about, that there is a third option that doesn't have anything to do with survival. And the interesting piece about the survival is that in this day and age, for most of us in this country, you know, our physical survival is really not at stake at all. But we still are in the fight and flight response because we have put our sense of self-identity and self-esteem at stake rather than our physical survival.
Yeah.
And that's how we get ourselves into the kind of messes that we get into.
Yeah. Well, I know that for me, freeze often isn't an automatic habit because I'm actually addicted to movement. I'm really hyperactive mentally, physically, probably. Spiritually, but I do know that rest, not freezing, but consciously choosing rest is a way mm-hmm. to shift out of the me versus you, right versus yes. wrong game
yes.
and more into the learning field. Because I can't truly learn when I am, playing survival games with my own self. And I recognize this. Just even last week, I was in a conflict, a surprise conflict, right? I sometimes can see conflict coming and then I can prepare and kind of know, how to move more consciously, especially in work settings. I'm really great at that. And I've got a high conflict threshold, which is not always a great thing. But personally, I did not see this one coming. And it was somebody that came back to me after 2 days of having that conversation, and it was a conflict for that person and it wasn't for me. And they knew that if there's ever like a time where something was bothering them, that I would want to process it. So they came back to me and wanted to process something that was happened 2 days ago. And I was just shocked. I mean, I really was shocked that we had such a difference of emotional reaction to that conversation mm-hmm. that immediately I jumped into reptilian brain defensiveness mm-hmm. and I felt it coming, and I still took, over 5 minutes, 10 minutes to shift into learning mode. And the thing that caught me is this person is somebody that I love and somebody that is highly emotionally intelligent and intuitive, and said something that just like, I had to say, you are right about that. I see that I am doing this right now. And that just immediately demonstrated to me how far away I'd gotten from myself. And so, so that's a technique I sometimes use, is like, mm-hmm. If I can hear what other people are saying as a reflection of what, as a reflection of what their difference is, then it helps mm-hmm. me be able to have some degree of objectivity and switch to more less yes. reactive fight or mm-hmm. flight or freeze mode.
Something has to happen that slows us down.
Sure.
On automatic, those are reflexive behaviors that really do not require hardly any thought whatsoever. So a statement, a period of time where we can just slow down so that our brains have a chance to click in, so their rational thought can click in, or it just won't happen. So yeah. I think that if you got out of your automatic mode in 5 to 10 minutes, I think you did just great. Because some of us stay in that mode for weeks and then months and years.
Yeah, well, this is the first conflict that really shocked me about this one person. But I have been in conflicts for 5 to 10 years. And what helped me there is just really intently listening to what that person was saying, even though I mm-hmm. did not like it. And it was clear that I was rejecting and defensive about everything. And so one was just really listening, even despite my automatic reactions to it. But two, just the reminder of like, what do I want here? I mean, I even said to my out loud, and I didn't hear it because I'm an extrovert and I talk out loud, or I think out loud. I said, what is this really about? What is this about? Right? Because I'm confused, and confusion oftentimes is a way for us to not learn, right? I'm confused. I don't understand. And it's just an automatic, like, I don't want to learn right now. You know that because you've seen it in kids. Adults do this all the time. I don't understand, right? So I'm like, what is this about? I'm confused. So I'm aware of my own like triggers when I get in conflict, hopefully. But the thing that actually pulled me out is like, what do I want here? And I like, this is my best friend in the whole world. And what I want is peace, and I want her to feel good. That's not a me accommodating. That's like me choosing the relationship over me feeling defensive. And I think that that's a good tactic I give to people. It's like, what do you want here with this person right here, right now? In a different situation, I will still love her, but I'll want something different from that conversation besides her to feel good and her, you know, us to choose peace. But that's what I wanted then. So oftentimes, if you know a conflict's coming or if you're in one, I advise people, what are you here for right now? It's just a really good question that can ground you and get you, slow you down and to get you more to learn versus to react. Yes. How about you? Is there something that you
what
recommend?
I hear you saying is that we need some sense of self-awareness, some sense of mindfulness, so that we can begin to see ourselves moving into automatic mode, so that then we can make a different choice.
Now, how long do you think that takes, Michael, for I just said this very easily, the what I know or my triggers, but you know... that I've been through multiple renditions of, you know, self-awareness programs and conscious mindset and meditation. And obviously I'm a clinical psychologist. So, and I do this for a living. What's the process? What do you think that it takes for people to be aware of what are their automatic conflict triggers?
I think that it is essentially an unlearning process. Mm-hmm. That if we were raised with these kinds of understandings, rather than being raised into the win-lose perspective of power, which is what happens with most of us, I think we would be much more able to understand that we don't need to do that. When I work with, let's say, teenagers with these issues, they seem to be able to pick up what we are talking about much more quickly because they don't have the baggage that the adults have.
Yeah.
So I think, in a sense, it is unlearning much of the baggage we've been taught around what I must do to maintain my sense of identity and self-esteem.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, absolutely. I think, too, it's being careful of choosing who influences you. And you started off with this, talking about how, you know, parents who are overly rejecting or...
Domineering,
punitive, or just like, this is how it is. This is what right is. Like, I also think as adults, we subjugate our influence over to authority figures still. So I just want to caution people out there. If you are with a guide, a professional, or anybody surrounding you that is saying like, this is the way, the right way to do it, like to kind of take back your own consciousness and choose who influences you. And for me, like if you are growing a skill, whether it's self-awareness or conflict skills or team building trust skills, make sure that your guide is a person that who routinely, consistently, reliably learns from differences rather than forces a particular rigid, dogmatic program on you. What do you think about
that? You were very wise, Crystal.
I have also been called a rebel before.
Well, that is part of your wisdom.
Sometimes. And sometimes it's just because I like being a smartass. Michael, is there one more thing you'd like to share on this topic?
No, I just want to thank you for letting me join you on this podcast and hope that we can do it again.
Yeah, tell us just a little bit about where people can find out more of Dr. Michael Broom.
Well, you can go to my website. Actually, I have two. My professional website that talks about these kind of topics and leadership is at Chumans.com, Chumans.com. And then I also have a more personal website up of my personal thoughts around spiritual issues, political issues, personal issues at broom-closet.com. broom-closet.com.
That's great.
So thank you for asking me that.
Yes, that's great.
Chumans.com and Broom Closet.
I love that. And I know that you and I will partner together again in the future. And again, it's just most important that we collaborate together during this time and we draw like-minded leaders into a tribe that will progressively shape the next generation of leaders. So thanks for your time.
Absolutely.
And your wisdom with me. Talk to you soon.
It is my pleasure.